sometimes I look so tired. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we are live in Surprise, Arizona, spring training home of the Royals, and a chance now to talk to the general manager of the Royals, president of baseball operations, Dayton Morris.
Am I the president? Did I get a raise?
Aren't you?
Or
did I go too far?
Yeah, I think so.
A vice president?
I think I'm VP or something.
VP of baseball operations? The guy in
Don't
charge of baseball. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And then I kicked you after that, if that's not enough. How you doing, Dayton?
Good.
Good to see you.
You doing all right?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Doing well. I'm older. I'm shorter and I'm fatter, but other than that, everything's good.
Yeah.
How about yourself? What you, hope springs eternal.
Yeah.
It's a new year. I know the last couple of years, and I've listened to Mike a lot since we've been down here and talking about, you know, the word rebuild.
Right.
Is one that nobody wants to use anymore. That it's time to turn the page. Where are you? Where's your optimism? And how would you classify?
I think you're exactly right. And you know, I mean, we knew, and I think you and I have talked about this before. I mean, we knew after the 2015 season that if we chose to hold on to our players, continue to push and try to get back to a World Series, and that, you know, 18, 19, 20, and 21, there was going to be some challenges for us. And did we expect 100 losses? Not necessarily in 18 and 19. But, you know, we are where we are. We're putting that behind us. Nobody's pulled. Two seasons, but you know, we're very excited about where we are right now. I think our position players, Surin, are extremely talented and have a chance to be impactful, and I think there's a potential two or three all-stars, you know, in that lineup. They've got to put up numbers. We've got to do well, as you know. But you know, and the pitching has been a little bit of a work in progress for us, especially as it pertains to the rotation. You know, Danny Duffy and I think Brad Keller have a chance to be dominant, as good as any 1-2 combination in our league. I didn't say they're the best, but they're certainly capable of carrying a team if they're right. And then Jake Junis and Mike Montgomery, we need to continue to see them take a step forward. And right now we're looking at the fifth starter spot. We're looking to obviously go internal. We're making it a wide open competition, and of course we're very excited and encouraged about the young arms that we have on the horizon. And the challenge there for us is going to be when to transition them in to the major leagues. And you know, as you know, our philosophy, you know, we'd always rather be maybe a month too late than a month too early.
Right.
And, you know, you got one chance to get it right, really, with young pitching. And you don't want to put them in a position where they're completely overmatched. They're going to be challenged.
Sure.
And you don't want to hurt them from a psychological standpoint either, right? So, you know, those are the challenges we have. But fortunately, I think there's enough experience, you know, in this organization at this point in time to be able to figure this out.
The young guys are a lot of people's conversation. They've looked so good already in the minor leagues. Do you have a question I get all the time is when,
right?
When, and
right.
You know, it's easy to
that's
say.
That's the question I asked. Too. Right, yeah.
Right. Sure. And it's easy to say, well, you know, their performance will dictate that, right? That's obviously part of the equation. But do you have? How would you answer that to a fan that says, "When am I going to see Singer, Kowar, Buich, and Lynch?" You know.
Well, the quality of their pitches, as far as just raw stuff, is certainly good enough to get major league hitters out for the next 15 plus years. Okay, and so, but you want to be able to make sure that they can make pitches and with runners in scoring position, that they can field their position, hold runners. You don't want it to speed up on them. Okay, so Luke Hochschaver, for example, Luke Hochschaver had just as good a stuff as these guys did, right? And then in Hoch, you know, we saw how the struggles that he went through in the rotation, and then it becomes somewhat of a psychological battle, you know, as you take the mound every fifth day, and there's not a lot of room for error, and you don't have a very, very good team where it can pick you up or cover your mistakes and erase some of your mistakes, if you will. The one thing that we do have right now is we have a veteran catcher who's won Gold Gloves and has the type of demeanor that he breeds confidence in pitchers. And I think we not to take away from anybody last year, but, you know, losing Salvi, I think kind of hurt the psychology of the pitching staff a little bit. And so I think we'll have that swagger back and that commitment and that conviction that you need to see, truthfully. Because all these guys, as you know, they have good enough arms and quality enough pitches that they can get major league hitters out. They just have to do it consistently. And then that's the things that we talked about, being able to make pitches in the stretch, you know, hold runners, field your position, and just relish that one-on-one competition that gives you that edge when it's pitcher versus hitter.
When you drafted him, you know, and I think the first five were college pitchers, you know, the numbers say that if you got two starters and a reliever out of that, you probably beat the odds.
That's right.
But now that they're performing and continuing to perform, none of them have hit their head on a ceiling. Are you optimistic that you've got four frontline starting pitchers here?
You know,
or is that being greedy?
No, I think no, it's not. I think that's the way you have to look at it. I know they feel that way, and our pitching people do as well. Mike Matheny, who saw all those guys pitch, I think he probably saw every start last year, either live or, you know, on television, and or the replay. And so, you know, he had a chance to evaluate those guys. And there's very few people that have been around that has a feel for managing pitchers better than Mike Matheny. You know, obviously he was a catcher for many years, and then that's kind of his reputation. And sure enough, you know, I learned a lot from him last year, and he has a way of just seeing things and making people believe in themselves. And so he certainly believes in those pitchers. But you bring up a good point, and if we end up, or you bring up a thought of mine, if we end up transitioning those guys to the major leagues in the bullpen, don't think that we just think they're going to be in the bullpen. It
right.
might be a way just to ease them into the rotation at some point in time. But because we won't hesitate to do that. I don't know if we would do that with all of them.
Right.
But I could see us doing that with maybe a, you know, a Brady Singer or a Chris Bubich, or I don't know if we would do it with Jackson Coar at this point in time. But and probably not with Lynch. Open-minded with Coar. But you could see some of that. You could see us, you know, put him in the bullpen at some point and then ease him into the rotation, similar to what we did with Brad Keller a couple of years ago and when we added him to the team in spring training after being a Rule 5 pick.
Does the opener, you know, the concept of the opener give you kind of another path maybe to do that? I mean,
yeah.
You know,
good point.
You know, but when you're in the bullpen, you guys only see your stuff once,
right?
That's, we've talked about it many times, about how special starting pitchers are, that they can beat a guy right. again and again and again after he's already seen him. But that seems like it's almost kind of a natural, right,
yeah.
to maybe be the new way to bring up a live arm, to not have to get a, you know, an all-star caliber hitter out twice, but have success and feel good about himself.
I think that's a very good point. And Mike Matheny has talked about that, you know, all last summer. All winter. There's very few days where either him and myself or others in the organization didn't consult with him about just preparing, you know, our pitchers for 2020. And so that's something that we're very open minded with. And what I've always believed, and Ned and I have talked about this at length, and Mike understands our philosophy as well, that we just got to get 27 outs. However you can do it, manage to get 27 outs. And I've always believed, you know, you break the season up in parts. I mean, you take the first 30 games, you do everything you can to win those 30, and then you worry about the next 30. And you kind of break it up in those types of segments. And I think if you look at it that way, instead of just 162, and I understand, in a perfect world, you run out five starters that are going to, you know, give you six to nine innings and 200-plus innings. I mean, that's
right.
what you're shooting for. But there's a supply and demand issue with that as well. And pitchers, as we know, are raised differently through the amateur ranks now than they were several years ago. And so we've just got to adapt and adjust. And I think, you know, well, I know Mike Matheny's prepared to do that.
We've mentioned the name. We're talking to Dayton Moore here in the program. We've mentioned the name Mike Matheny a number of times here. He takes over as the manager. Is there listen, and I don't think anybody was saying, things have gone awry with Ned, but is there, you know, Ned decides to step down. Is there kind of a, you know, do you look at it now? I notice there's kind of just a different feeling, right? Not better or worse, just different. Is there a time period where, hey, there just needs to be that natural change that
probably,
you know, this is good for the organization,
yeah,
just to have a new
voice and a new
approach?
I know exactly what you're saying. And I'm not sure that I did a very good job of identifying that. I mean, because when you're working with somebody every single day the way we did for 10 years or so, you know, you learn to understand the rhythm and the you know what Ned's going to say before he even says it, and there's just kind of a comfort level, right? Comfort's not really a good thing. I mean, it can it's important at certain times, but you know, you want to feel that, you know, you've got you don't want to really feel secure in this game. And yeah. I could see that why you would ask that question or why you might think that. That being said, I know what a great competitor Ned is, and I think Ned did a lot of things last year to kind of protect the development of some of the players. And not that he was making excuses for him, but in a way, you know, he felt he was covering them. And you know, we talked a lot about the rebuild and, you know, you're a few years away and trying not to create false hope or false expectations. And Mike's obviously coming in here with a different set of eyes and obviously an urgency to try to do something special. And it has been. I mean, we're on the field longer. There's more preparation going on at this point in time. The players are very hungry, and the workouts are much more serious. And so I think it's a healthy change at this point.
Andy Reid told me, you know, listen, it was time in Philadelphia. Just, in, you know, and I think Andy never said this, but other people told me that really Andy kind of approached ownership that maybe it was time a year before, and he had what was by far his worst season that last year. It was like he could feel it that, hey, this organization needs a new voice. I need a new group to try to go out, and maybe that's just where it was. The timing was perfect here. Similar, it seemed, you know, like very similar in the way that was.
You know, I asked
But still continuity with a lot of the coaches as well.
No doubt, and I think, you know, Mike being here last year gave him a comfort level with some of the coaches and them with him as well. We've always had a really good coaching staff, and you go up and down the league and I talk to my colleagues, and they often discuss the perception and just the reputation of our coaching staff. But I wanted to, you know, I asked a Hall of Fame manager last year, I won't mention his name, but I said, when did you know it was time? And he said, well, I knew in spring training, when I gave my opening talk and I didn't feel like anybody was listening, it was probably going to be my last year.
Right.
And, you know, I think that can happen. I mean, that can certainly be a part of just the natural progression of leadership.
Mike Matheny was a guy that was immensely respected as a baseball player, as a baseball guy, even when he was a player. People talking about he's going to be a manager. Never had a losing season with the Cardinals. Were you surprised that he was available? Did you have to beat out other teams to go get Mike Matheny in this organization? You've never been shy in the glasses previously, and we'll see with Mr. Sherman, but I know he's a baseball guy at heart. You've always been able to go grab people. If there wasn't a job open, there's a good person available, we're going to grab him and add him to the mix. We'll figure out what we all do once we get him in here. Matheny seems to be one of those guys. Did you have to beat off other teams to get him?
We did, you know, especially when we were trying to bring him on as a special assistant. Mike did not want to jump back in the managerial seat right away once he was let go. He wanted to take some time. He felt like there were some things he needed to adjust and grow in some areas. And so there were several organizations that were reaching out to him to bring him on board, bring him part of the staff as a consultant, et cetera, anticipating that there could be a managerial change at some point in time. And that was probably the time when there was the most competition, and we had to sell him about who we are and what we're about and what our future looked like. And then once we began to work together, we knew that this was going to potentially, you know, be a landing spot for Mike. And there were other organizations that reached out to his agent. And I think Mike made it very clear, if I'm going to manage again, I want to do it in Kansas City. Of course, we have the ownership change, and that put us in kind of a holding pattern. And I told Mike, and Mike agreed. I said, look, you know, I want you to be the manager here, but I want John Sherman to want you as badly as I want you. And Mike Matheny agreed. He said, I wouldn't have it any other way. That's the way it needs to be. And of course, Mr. Glass had a relationship with Mike Matheny, and Mr. Glass was somebody that would you know, point me to him and his direction in the past. I mean, would this guy be somebody that we should look at as a future manager? Really like him, and of course, when he got let go, that intensified a little bit. And But we wanted that to be a part of it. I mean, I wanted, you know, Mr. Sherman to feel really good about Mike Matheny, and he met with him on a few occasions, had several conversations with him along that path, and you know, he felt really good. And Mike, I mean, when you sit down and interview a guy like Mike Matheny, he kind of takes the interview to you. I mean, it's a very natural baseball discussion, but this guy's a lot of depth to his thoughts, and he's really good. And look, we don't win here. It's not because of Mike Matheny. I promise you, it's because Dayton Moore has not done the job that needs to be done, and that because Mike Matheny, he knows how to win.
All right, that is Royals GM Dayton Moore. When we come back, we will talk about the new owner of the Royals with Dayton Moore, John Sherman, who is out here in Surprise, Arizona, and taking a look at the organization top to bottom. We'll get into Dayton Moore's relationship with John Sherman. That's next here in the program, live in Surprise.
The program with Soren Petro.
Vulgarity is not really good. It's not a real strong part of anybody's vocabulary. It shouldn't be. But there's a time it's the best freaking way to explain yourself.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. In our final hour of the program, talking to Royals General Manager Dayton Moore. And one of the new faces that's out here, we've talked a lot about Mike Matheny, but John Sherman, new owner. He has seen a successful organization over in Cleveland, and that's one of the things I want to talk about here with Dayton, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, VP of Baseball Operations, with us here in the program. You know, the success he's had over in Cleveland, he knows how they did it. And being a successful organization, you've won here. You know, I mentioned you could tap that. You're not wearing your World Series ring, but you could tap that World Series ring on the table if you wanted to remind people of the success that's been here. Does that end up being a perfect combination, two winning organizations, and maybe exchanging some new ideas?
We're all invigorated, Seren. We really are. I mean, John's been terrific. He really has. He asks great questions. He wants to be involved. He wants to help. I've had so much fun just the last few days, just walking the fields with him, talking to the players with him, explaining certain things about the players' past and the evolution of their development, where we need to go in the future. Today, this afternoon, he has a conference call today with the Commissioner of Baseball, Commissioner Manfred, and then our performance science people, and along with myself and Mr. Sherman, are going to sit down and, you know, we're going to talk about what they do and what they're doing and what their recommendations to the organization, what we need to do to stay cutting edge. And we'll do that, you know, all week with various people within certain departments. And, you know, the game has changed a lot. And in fact, every year, not uncommon. I mean, it's typical process, but as you sit down and address your entire organization and you set the tone and you try to articulate the message and inspire, this is what we need to do for this year, and you lay out certain points and you emphasize a part of your philosophy and you just break it down, the vision of the year. And so when we first started, I could look in the room and I could say, okay, consciously or subconsciously, I could say, you know what, I can do that job. I did that job. I did that job. I can do this job. I can do that job. Really, the only job I couldn't do was the trainers. Now I sit down in that room, okay? And I say that humbly. I mean,
right.
I did those jobs,
right,
you know, coming through the ranks.
Right.
Now I sit down and I look at that room and I'm like, okay, I can't do that person's job. I have no idea what this person, you know, how I could do this. I mean, it's there's just so many different layers and so many different people with expertise, and so it requires somebody like Mr. Sherman, who has a very inquisitive mind, and somebody that you know, can help us put it all together, support what we do. And that's why we're going through this process with all these different areas and just trying to educate everybody on what we need to do and how we need to continue to get better.
And in the process, and as you mentioned, you know, you knew this was coming, and it began really in 2018. And some people have been critical. Some people, I've asked the question, should you be moving a Danny Duffy, a Salvador Perez, a Whit Merrifield. That's one of the things, because the quote-unquote tank approach has seemingly been the popular way to do it. You did not go down that road. Do you have any regrets? Let's start with that. Do you have any regrets for how you did choose to get things started and not moving some of the assets you had?
Well, I think only because I know the opportunities that were presented to us with those particular players, and I just didn't feel, and that's not uncommon. I mean, we get proposals all the time for certain players, as we make proposals as well. And it's all about acquisition cost and what you're getting in return. But I do know this, that we'll always do what's in the best interest of our organization in making it better. Salvador Perez is a once-in-a-generation talent, as we know. And I think he's going to have an exceptional year. He's got several years left. And, I mean, he's a player that, I mean, hopefully we're in a position to keep, you know, sign him to even another long-term deal. And obviously he's got to go out and do what we know he's capable of doing. But you have to be – I would do some things probably a little differently this next time around maybe be a little more aggressive in some areas with moving a player or two, maybe in year four or year five, so we could have more sustained success. So I think that's a fair question, a good question. It's a question I ask myself. I would probably do things maybe a little bit different with that.
Does it allow you, though, now to, you know, Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, when they came up, were really kind of thrown into the 3 and 4 hole. You know, they came up and everything was thrust on them. I've talked about it with a number of guys here. I remember when Zach Greinke was called up before you were here, 19-year-old kid, and the whole town looked to him to save the team.
That's right.
And that was a difficult situation for him to be in. Does this make it maybe a little bit easier on this next wave to have those guys? Is that what, you know, part of the value is to have Whit Merrifield batting up at the top or second and have a Salvador Perez in the middle to where Khalil Lee doesn't have to come up and bat leadoff to first day?
I mean, you're sitting in our meetings.
Right.
I mean, that's a great observation.
And is that an invitation to come sit?
Well, sure. Yeah, we don't have any secrets.
You don't. You are amazingly honest, which is very refreshing in the modern era of professional sports. But so, you know, as you sit here now, then does that mean that the curve on the young players, the learning curve, may be shorter, maybe quicker? Because
I hope so. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think when you have examples on the field, in the clubhouse, off the field, modeling the behavior and the work ethic and that you want and you desire, it quickens the, you know, the learning curve, helps players, you know, get better faster. And, you know, older players will hold others accountable and set the example of how you need to go about doing your business and playing. And I think that's really important.
Is the game and is your approach changing towards more position flexibility? I can remember, you know, that the industry would take a guy who's either a hitter or a pitcher.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of open to, you know, Shohei Ohtani and others. There's a little bit of openness, but certainly as more and more pitchers were needed on the roster, I know we've got a new rule limiting the number of pitchers, but the position flexibility, the Ben Zobrist of the world, Whit Merrifield being the great example right now, but Hunter Dozier is also kind of being viewed differently now.
Yeah.
Is that
it is
where the game is going?
I think so. I mean, we've got so much information now on just you know, load management and exertion rates and, you know, just try to how do we keep our players fresh? Keep them fresh mentally, keep them fresh physically. So I think the more flexibility you have with your roster, players being able to play different positions, certainly the better. And, of course, we will have a 26-man roster this year, 13 pitchers, 13 position players. That helps. But I do believe that the flexibility with your players is really important.
And one of the reasons you can be so flexible and why Dozier can play on the outfield, you're able to grab Michael Franco on a one-year deal. Were you surprised? And he's got an arbitration year. You would, you know, if he has a great year, he's got to go to arbitration with you. He's not just walking away in free agency. Were you surprised that he was available?
I wouldn't have thought this time last year, no.
Right.
But, you know, he got off to a great start in 2019, and then it just kind of unraveled for him. There was a lot of competition for him. Rene Francisco had a terrific relationship with him. That helped us. I think he trusted us. And when you're put in that situation as a player who grows up with the same organization, in his case, the Phillies, and then all of a sudden, you know, they release him. you know, you get burnt a little bit and you kind of lose that innocence. And he wanted to go somewhere where he really trusted the people, and he trusted Renee, and we were able to get him really at a pretty reasonable deal. And he's in great shape. He's worked hard. He went to Miami and worked with Pedro Grifol and Jorge Soler and MJ Melendez, and Mike Matheny had been down there a couple times as well, and Renee was back and forth, and Mike Tozart and all of our people. So yeah, I think he's adjusted well, and there is that trust factor, and I think he's going to have a good year.
All right, last subject, and I know the commissioner talked a lot about this. I've left it for the very end. I think everyone in the industry has had to answer a lot of questions about what happened with the Astros. Talk to different guys. Different guys say different things about whether or not word was kind of out that the Astros were, you know, doing something. You know, I think I can't remember if it was Danny who said we knew something was out there, but maybe not to the extent. Alex Gordon was the one who said that. We heard things, but we didn't know to what extent. How surprised were you to see this all unfold?
I was surprised just how, you know, elaborate it was. You know, the we'd always heard those types of things, and not just in Houston, but other ballparks as well. And the guys just stealing signs in different ways with cameras, or, you know, they had a friend or an ex-teammate sitting in center field with binocular. I mean, whatever. I mean, you always heard crazy stuff in certain ballparks. So you'd do certain things with your signs to try to telegraph, the pitch calling. But yeah, I was surprised. But you just don't anticipate that.
The thing that surprises me is they talk about, you know, the commissioner said yesterday we've got to try to, you know, limit the use of video. It kind of reminds me of Prohibition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they wanted to try to limit the use of alcohol, and they finally said, well, wait a minute, we can't. So here it is, and we're going to tax it, and we're going to move forward. Video is such a part of the game now. Cameras everywhere, looking at the break of pitches and, right, you know, where everything's going. Can the genie be put back in the bottle? Or
we'll see. I think I'm with you. I think it's going to be difficult. I'm for this. I'm for we have certain rules, expectations, and if you deliberately break the rules, you should be punished severely. Don't punish the people that are doing it the right way and trying to take advantage of the current technology and the video, and let us use it to learn, to teach, to provide feedback for the players, not to cheat. If you cheat, you should be punished severely.
Do you think that's going to happen in the future?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we've got a meeting here in a few days with Major League Baseball. Joe Torre, Chris Young, and others will be in, and, you know, they're making their rounds to visit with all of the front offices here in the Cactus League, and we'll sit down and talk about it. I'm not sure which direction they're going to go in.
We're talking to Dayton Moore here in the program. Time for my final four, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. Just four quickies. I will start you with this. In 2030, are the Royals playing baseball where?
Oh, boy.
That puts you past the current.
Yeah. You know, that's a great question. I
would presume it's come up between you and Mr. Sherman.
Yeah, you know what? Not a whole lot. I mean, okay. I'll tell you the truth. Whether we play in Kauffman Stadium, a downtown stadium, whether we reconfigure Arrowhead and just make it one, I don't really think like that. I mean,
okay.
I just we're, you know, where we play, what the facility, looks like. As long as the fans, enjoy coming to the ballpark, that's the most important thing. And I can see the advantages to staying there at Kauffman Stadium. I can see the advantages of a downtown stadium. I think what we need to honestly look at is how can we improve, all the franchises in Kansas City. You know, what's best for the Chiefs? What's best for the Royals? What's best for Sporting KC and others? And I think that's how we have to look at it, look at kind of a big picture approach with it.
Okay. How long will you be the general manager?
Well, right now for 2020, I know that. And I love what I'm doing. I love leadership. I'm excited about our future. I'm really excited about working with Mike and Mr. Sherman. And so I told Mr. Sherman when he was going through this process, he asked me the same question, and I told him, and I know it's probably what you're supposed to say, but it's really how I feel. I said, you know, John, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I mean, I, It's not that important to me. I want to be involved with what we're doing here with the Royals, and I love our community. I've come to really respect and love everybody associated with sports in our community, and you know, so I've got a different perspective today, certainly, than I had 6 or 7 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just take it 1 year at a time.
1 year at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll go with that. When was the last time you talked to Ned?
Talked to Ned at Mr. Glass's service.
Okay.
And he looked great, and I invited him to spring training. He felt he wanted to take a year off, but I think I would see Ned doing something in our organization in the near future.
Yeah, so he still enjoys the game.
Yeah, Ned's great. Ned's so positive, and he's fun to be around, and you know, he has fun at the ballpark, and he's got a lot to add.
Yeah, all right. And then what's the hot spot and surprise for Dayton Moore?
The ballpark.
Besides the ballpark, away from the ballpark.
Boy. Oh, my goodness, Sharon. Oh, man. I don't have one. I really don't. You know, I usually eat here at the ballpark every once in a while. We go get something to eat, and I can't even tell you where. So it's pretty boring.
Yeah, that's a pretty focused.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Dayton, well, we always appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your question.
And I do. Your honesty is very refreshing.
Yeah.
You and your entire organization, and that obviously starts with you.
I hope so.
And I think it's great for the fans,
too.
Yeah,
I do, too.
All right.
Okay, Sharon.
Thanks so much.
Man. Thanks.
The program with Sharon Petro.
No human being can carry that much hostility his entire life.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Final time from here in the Valley of the Sun. Todd Lebo joins me here on the mic in Surprise, Arizona. Curtis Siebold, Jed Marshall back in the studios. Our thanks to Dayton Moore joining us last couple of segments. Always appreciate the time, and I do appreciate the honesty. We don't get that
everywhere
in sports.
Everywhere. Yeah,
And I do appreciate how upfront he is. He's never shied away from the times that it's rebuilding, never shied away from the times that, hey, something that's more money than we got.
But, you know, we told everyone that expect Dayton Moore to be on at 5 today because we did this yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a really nice just conversation with Dayton in the clubhouse today when it was open. And he's just so fun to kind of talk to, and he asks us questions too.
Right.
You know, he's someone who likes to get a lot of opinions about things. And I've always enjoyed.
Yes, Todd, who should start opening day? I thought that was interesting.
He did. He thought it was weird.
And Todd said Dennis Leonard.
Yeah. He did not ask Todd.
Bring Leo back. I do like Dayton, and I think, you know, you always ask how long you want to do this,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he knows he's got a contract for this year. I just we've talked about this for the past several years with him. He's not your average, everyday baseball general manager.
No.
He's got a lot of things he cares about, and he really loves Kansas City, you know, because he's from the area, you know,
Wichita,
as a kid, but not Kansas City. And he spent, obviously, a long, very successful time in Atlanta, but he has really ingrained himself in Kansas City. And he
his
likes
kids grew up there.
Yeah, this is their town.
And that's one of the things we talked about today was family and kids. It's one of the, I think, why people gravitate towards him. You know, he cares about you. He always asks about our families and that kind of thing. I know he knows I've got daughters because he always asks me, how are my girls? And you know, so I think he is a genuinely caring human being. And I think, you know, listen, he talked about how well it's going with John Sherman. We've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Seen the two of them spending a lot of time together, walking from field to field out here for the workouts. There's still, and Dayton Moore's not going anywhere. John Sherman's not going to come in and fire a guy who built a world championship, particularly when there does seem to be a young wave of talent coming. But you know, work together for a year. You find the warts.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and maybe there will only be a couple And it'll be great, great working environment. Or maybe they'll find that they have different philosophies, and a year from now, maybe it's different. I tend to not think so.
Well, this whole thing will be a little bit of a different thing for Dayton Moore, because Dayton Moore's entire regime as Royals general manager was for David Glass, and that was basically the Glass family. He talked to David Glass a couple of three times a week, maybe every day at different points. John Sherman is the face of this ownership group. It's his team. We know that. But there are... You know, this is a group of people who bought this team. This is not the same kind of thing that it was with the Glass family. And I don't expect owner number 8B to be calling Dayton Moore and asking, why haven't you signed somebody? That's not going to happen. This, his interactions will be with John Sherman. John Sherman will be the guy who has to deal with the fact that there's some other owners here and there. But this is a different thing. You know, the Kansas City Royals, the entire existence of the Royals was Ewing Kaufman owned the team. And then the little weird thing, and then David Glass on the team. This is a different thing to have an ownership group be involved with the team. There's no doubt John Sherman is the majority guy, or the face of it at least, and he will be the one. But this is a little bit of a different feel than what the Royals have been used to. Certainly in Dayton Moore's tenure.
Yeah, it is. And so it'll take some getting used to. And they'll, like we said, there'll be some feeling out points out there. And, you know, you mentioned I asked him how long he wants to be the general manager, and he said, well, I've got a contract for a year, and pretty much just said, like, this is all I plan on doing. So, not throwing, you know, a lot of people kind of speculate that, you know, maybe it's not just this year, but maybe it's not 10 years either.
Yeah, we never got the, there was a lot of speculation a couple of years ago about the Atlanta job and whether or not he was even allowed to talk to him, and, you know, who knows what the true real story is to that. But I think at this point, if he didn't go back there, wasn't allowed to, or whatever, the Braves have a lot of really good young players. That would have been an easier GM job than what's going on right here in Kansas City. I don't see him as someone who wants to be a general manager somewhere else, I don't think, at this point. I mean, he really, regardless of what the overall record is of your 15 years as general manager, they put a trophy up. They, you know, flew some flags. That is successful by any stretch anywhere. And I think he certainly doesn't want to go out with a couple of 3 years of 100 lost seasons. You don't want to go out that way when you've been to the highest point.
No, I would agree.
If he continues and does build some modicum of success over the next few years, and to where he's not someone who loses his job because of the organizational failing, something, the only other thing he could do other than be a GM is move up the ladder within the ball club. And I don't know what step would that be.
I don't think
just
there is
different
anywhere.
Title.
Yeah,
know,
I mean, it's
you could be an ambassador for all that matters.
He's the Theo Epstein of the Royals. Theo may carry, you know, you heard Dayton and I said, you know, the president of it. He said,
hold on now.
Did I get a promotion? I'm sorry. It's a vice president. And so, but whatever, you know, maybe Theo's got a fancier title, but at the end of the day, anything and everything baseball is Dayton Moore. And I don't know that Dayton Moore wants to go mess around with the business side. You know, the Carl Peterson idea. I think he's got the job he wants, and when he's had enough of it, he'll walk away.
Well, he's very involved in the Urban Youth Academy, and the Royals are involved with that as well. I could see if he didn't want to be the everyday general manager, because one of the things we were just kind of chatting about today was this job has changed since 2006, and certainly changed since when he got into baseball back in the 90s. You know, we talk about the NFL's 365 business. This is 366 this year for baseball. There's not a lot of laying around in time for these guys. There's so much work to be done, so many levels. All, you know, the Royals fans go out there and watch the Royals play, right? Well, they got teams, you know, levels of the minor leagues. They got academies in other countries. They're scouting the world trying to find players. It is an all-encompassing thing for sure. And I think, how long do you want to do that? You know me, if I had enough money, I wouldn't work today probably. But, you know, I don't know if I'd want to be on the grind that it is to be the Major League Baseball general manager in a small market team where it's harder to do some of these things.
But it's kind of like any performer. You think they get past the part where they don't need to work anymore, but part of what's made them who they are is just that need to consistently do it. I wouldn't want to work past that point if I was as Dayton Moore, but that's why I'm not Dayton Moore, and he's a GM, and I work at a radio station because that drive.
And I do think Todd is right, though. There is a sense of I've been there and I've done that on building a championship baseball club, and there's maybe Listen, maybe it's politics. Maybe it's the Urban Academy. He is very invested in Kansas City. I don't know. I mean, but I think he recognizes his place as one of the city's forefathers, right? Mm-hmm. By running the Royals, he has that. He tries to give back to the community with the Urban Youth Academy and get people playing baseball and learning in team sports and the lessons you can learn from that. But yeah, I don't think it's 10 more years. Whatever the number is.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. No. I wouldn't, not doing this particular everyday grind. You know, one of the things about, like, you could, like, the Rolling Stones go out and pick up monstrous checks, but they're playing the same songs they wrote back then. They don't have to make, you know, you can't go out there and play the 15 Royals this year.
Right.
You've got to go make a new song for this.
Right.
It makes a lot harder to do.
Yeah, that is true. And we got a chance to chat a little bit with John Sherman. And I feel comfortable that the Royals are in good hands with John Sherman.
Yeah, I do too. He was very nice to sit and talk to us a little bit. This was just off the record chit chat. And well, weird day out there today. They have the Major League Baseball Authentics tent up. Yep. Every player had to come out and sign a number of bats and balls and stuff. You'll see these all in the MLB Authentic store at the K, probably online as well. So there was a lot of just action around the area there. Toby Cook was in and they were getting all this stuff signed. And Mr. Sherman just came and walked by and we were waiting for Mike Matheny to come out. We probably talked to him for 10 minutes just, you know, about kind of how it's been for him getting involved and nice little casual conversation. You know, I've liked him from the get-go. Everything we've heard about him from anybody was this is a great guy to own the Royals.
Right.
And I haven't seen anything that's going to change my mind on that. And I think it'll be a little different feel than what you have with David Glass because he lives here.
It's he'll be more present.
Yeah, he'll be around. I think it'll be every game probably. I'd be surprised if he's not at a game.
And I think, you know, this sale came together pretty quick. And I think that's one of the things that baseball wanted. They wanted a guy who's going to be in town. I think everybody appreciated what Mr. Glass did, but I think they also know, hey, how do we make it better? That's a guy in Kansas City.
Yeah.
That's going to be seen the way I remember as a kid. Mr. K at the seventh inning stretch standing in a suite waving out to all the fans.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. Hey, there's the Kauffmans. They're up there. And as fans, we'd wave back. I think they want to get back to a little bit more of that.
I think so, too. I think he's a really – I mean, he loves Kansas City as well. He wasn't born here, but this is his town.
This is his home.
And there's a whole lot of people in this group that this is their place.
That's right. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to Curtis and Jed. They do a lot of stuff while we're running around out here. Great work from them. Todd, always – great work. The best in the business coming out of here. Always great fun working with you, my friend.
Had a great time.
And Allie Trost. I hope you enjoyed all the social media stuff. She did a phenomenal job out here. And, you know, since she's joined us, just does great, great work. And so it was a lot of fun working with her at the Super Bowl and then out here. We'll see where we go next, that's for sure. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed all of our coverage. A little bit more coming your way tomorrow in the program as we'll bring home some Royals conversation as well. That's going to do it for us here in the program.